Good morning. We've got Mountain Trails Director Charlie Sturgis in the studio with his weekly Trails Update. Welcome. Thanks for coming by.
Good morning, Carolyn.
So, yeah, what about those races in Round Valley? Is that still going to happen with all the mud and the wet? And
you know, I'm going to have to give the organizers a little bit of a shout-out. Trish and Brooke. Brooke, who actually originally started the Midweek Mountain Bike Series. They stayed in great touch with us prior to the race and have seen the weather, the impending weather coming in. And they, to their credit, you know, it's really hard, you know, to be an event organizer and cancel an event, especially a big event like this. This is, you know, 600-700 riders. And they did cancel yesterday, so they did pull the plug. You'll see it on our Facebook post today. I think, given that they were willing to do something such as that, which also there's mechanisms within the city organization to also make them cancel if it's too muddy. But they're doing the right thing and pulling the plug. So hopefully people over the weekend will do the right thing and adjust their plans. This is not going to be a good weekend to ride. Devin said, we might get a little bit of sunshine, but it's not going to be enough to do much of anything. So anyhow, figure out some other plans. And once again, really appreciate working with the NICA folks. They did a great job on just pull the plug ahead of time. Yeah. It always hurts to do that as an event organizer, but it's the best thing. And they did it strictly almost based on trail impact. So,
Well, it wouldn't be a lot of fun riding when the mud starts to gum up.
Yeah, but you know, tires and I don't personally get it. You probably probably a little bit down my line on this is I don't want to ride my bike in the mud because I don't want to spend all the time cleaning it.
Exactly.
It's one thing to get caught. I got caught out in the rain a little bit on Tuesday. First time I've used my rain jacket actually on a ride in probably years. So and even that just has an impact on your bike.
Yeah.
But to just outright be in the mud is just a bit of a drag.
Well, and what a difference 1 week makes, right?
Yeah, yeah. And You know what? It's going to be absolutely – we have a big streak of clear weather coming up in about 5 days. So I know that's a long ways out. But look forward to that and some really good fall weather coming up. And, you know, maybe we'll get an Indian summer here at the end here of October. And it'll be beautiful. So just hang in there.
Yeah. So, Charlie, let me ask, you've probably heard about the mountain lion sighting once again, maybe the third or fourth one in the last couple of weeks. It seems to always be right up there in Upper Park Meadows. It's interesting. I mean, I know I've noticed over this past year, maybe even last year, the population of bunnies in Round Valley. And I'm wondering if that has something to do with this. I know you're not a wildlife biologist, but you're a trails guy.
I think I keep putting some of the weird animal behavior we've seen this summer on the kind of drought that we had. I think it's, you know, what it's going to end up doing is it's going to end up driving food sources for things like cougars to look for water someplace other than where they had. And it's also going to force animals like cougars and stuff to go look for food where they might not ordinarily look. So, you know, a lot of people forget, you know, when we see, like 2 years ago in a big winter, when we see cougars in town, they follow the deer in. So the deer come looking for, you know, relief from the hard winter. And the cougars follow them in. So I'm not exactly sure what's driving cougars into Park Meadows at the moment, although there seems to be an array of cats and dogs available. At any rate, it's and hopefully nobody's cats and dogs are getting taken. That would be tragic. I think drought has created a lot of weird animal behavior out there this year. I mean, when you have moose attacking lawn furniture.
Yeah.
I had a friend tell me the other day that their little Westie actually got booted by a moose. Head-on, head-butted, and actually survived just fine, but was a little beat up. Hmm. So that's pretty aggressive.
Yeah.
You know, moose, Westie.
Yeah. Keep control. Keep control of the dogs,
yeah.
Right? And pay attention when you're out there.
Exactly. You know, something else. First off, did you notice there was a trace of snow up there?
I did.
Yeah, I know that's actually It's exciting, but unexciting. I hate early snow, so yeah, we don't need it. I'd rather wait until November. Also, we do want to just kind of put it out there. We're not suggesting people go do this today or until this kind of muddy situation goes away, but we did complete the Bloods Lake Trail. So this new trail is designed for hiking only. Let me say it one more time. Hiking only. This is not a bike-oriented trail. Probably parts of it wouldn't even be fun to bike. It's a beautiful trail. We're super psyched about having had the opportunity to do that, to work with the city and Utah Open Lands and do this trail on Bonanza Flats. But it is there. The parking is the old gravel pit just above a three-way intersection. We don't have signs up, but if you're, this is a good time of year to get up there in the Bonanza Flats and enjoy it. So if you're looking for something new and different, we would welcome you to take a look at the Bloods Lake Trail.
Okay. Thanks, Charlie Sturgis. We appreciate you coming by.
Thanks, Carolyn.
Local News Hour. I'm Carolyn Murray. Our next guest is Connor Boyack. He's the president of the Libertas Institute. Good morning, Connor. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so tell us about this sort of epic agreement that was reached yesterday. It sounds like there has been an agreement between your organization, the Utah Patients Coalition, and the legislature to legalize medical cannabis in Utah beginning December 1st.
So our organization got this ball rolling about 5 years ago on medical cannabis, and since then we've been exploring every opportunity. We tried legislatively a few times, that failed, decided to take it to the ballot initiative for which the Utah Patients Coalition was then formed, but a new opportunity presented itself to still achieve our goal, which is a broad patient program for medical cannabis, and to do it in a way that would bring all of the opposition to the table. I mean, just a few weeks ago, that entire press conference they did with all of the opponents there, like all of those groups now support this agreement. And this agreement is just about 90% of what's in Prop 2. We have a broad condition list, a broad range of cannabis product options, a functional delivery system. It's a very decent, robust program, and now it's one that all the opposition supports, which means it's not going to get attacked year after year in the legislature. We're going to allow it to be implemented, and patients can be recuperating at home rather than being lobbyists and activists. I think that's a huge win.
So how is it that this came about, the negotiation and the what it appears to be is a shift in the sentiment on the part of the legislature?
So several weeks ago, the Speaker of the House, Greg Hughes, invited our side, so myself and then DJ, the director of the Utah Patients Coalition, into his office and said, like, look, I've been hearing both sides. I think there may be some underlying, you know, principles we can agree on. Is it worth having a conversation? And we said, you know, we're happy to listen, but we're very, very skeptical. And so he had a similar conversation with some of the opponents, and they were willing to listen. So we got together, and there was a lot of distrust, a lot of skepticism, a lot of frustration. And, I mean, we've been fighting for years, and these people that we've been fighting against have been, from our perspective, the cause of denying patients the medicine they need. So it took quite a while in these discussions to get to the point where we could talk policy and find and rather deliberate over the particulars and find ways to satisfy their concerns while preserving kind of the core of what we were trying to do. And as I said in the press conference, these meetings totaled about 40 hours in total over a few weeks, just trying to hash it out. And just through lots and lots of conversation and figuring out how to get there, we ultimately did. And that's a large part of the credit goes to the speaker, to Greg Hughes, really trying to broker a deal and find a way that was a win-win solution. And not everyone, not all sides love everything that's in this negotiated agreement, but it is something that will allow patients to get what they need, not have any poison pills or obstacles to undermine it. And now we've dismantled the opposition so that rather than defending it year after year in the legislature, we can just move on and get it going.
Yeah, so if you have a card, you can access cannabis. And you refer to it as transformational, which it seems to be. So Connor, talk about this. How, you know, what is it that a person has to have in order to access medical cannabis beginning in December?
So, you know, we have the condition list. You have to have an approved condition, and that was tweaked a little bit in this new agreement. We lost a couple of the very broad terms, such as, quote, other autoimmune disorders, even though things like HIV and MS are specifically listed as approved conditions. We lost, quote, other gastrointestinal disorders, even though we preserved Crohn's and ulcerative colitis as approved conditions. The definition of pain is actually a better one than is in Prop 2, so it will cover more people. Anyone who's in any pain for more than 2 weeks for which a non-opioid medication hasn't resolved it. So if you have some kind of pain and ibuprofen or Advil isn't working, you would qualify to be able to access cannabis for your pain. So if you have an approved condition and you're using cannabis in a form that's allowed under Utah law, for example, in an oil or a tablet or a lotion or a gummy if it's in cube shape, which sounds silly, but that's how we ended up in the negotiations. If it's in an approved format, then you would be okay under Utah law. You would have some legal protections for you as a patient.
And there are two dispensing models. Can you talk about that and how people would access?
Absolutely. So under Prop 2, we had dispensaries, and you know, we anticipated roughly 12 to 15 maybe throughout the state, privately owned dispensaries. There were many in the opposition who did not like that. They worried that that was not medicinal, it wasn't like a pharmacy, et cetera. So the short answer to all of this is that the way the negotiations ended up, we're going to have somewhere between 5 and 10 dispensaries instead, so a fewer number. They're being called medical cannabis pharmacies, but they're just dispensaries. And then as a separate concurrent delivery model, there's going to be this concept called the State Central Fill Medical Cannabis Pharmacy. And what that is a government-owned dispensary, for lack of a better term. And doctors can call in the order. You can call in the order for your cannabis medicine. It would then be shipped out within 24 hours through a private courier driver, so think, I guess, Uber Eats for, you know, medical marijuana, and they would drive it to the local health department and drop it off there where the patient could then go pick it up. We have a lot of skepticism if that model will ever work. It's the first of its kind in the country. We think it has legal and economic problems that will inhibit it from even operating ever, but that's the model that our opponents want. And as long as we have this other model where we do have some dispensaries that can open and will function, we're okay as part of the compromise, letting them test this thing out. And look, if it ever worked and didn't cost a ton of money, maybe it could be a good thing to have, you know, for rural areas, local county health departments. We'll see. But for now, it's workable because we have guaranteed several, quote, medical cannabis pharmacies or dispensaries. And that's something that is workable, functional, and can get patients what they need.
So what about dosing, for instance? Physicians wouldn't necessarily have the experience of working with this, you know, with this medicine. How will that guidance come down and be, you know, implemented?
So physicians can't legally dose anyways. This is a Schedule I substance. They can jeopardize their license. But the way this agreement is set up is that when a physician recommends treatment for cannabis, which is just free speech, a physician can recommend, you know, a chiropractic treatment or acupuncture or losing weight, right? So it's just a recommendation. It's just a manner of speech. However, optionally, if a physician wants to, if they want to jeopardize their license or if they feel that they know enough about dosing, they can specify what that dosing is, and then that becomes the type of cannabis medicine that the patient can purchase. However, in a scenario which is far more likely where the physician doesn't know anything about dosing because that information is not really there, they've not been trained in it, it's not really known, or they don't want to jeopardize their license, they would simply recommend cannabis. So you then have to go to the quote, pharmacy, the dispensary, and you would consult with a pharmacist who would then help you figure out, okay, hey, I think you should start with, let's start you with an oil, a few drops under the tongue, why don't you try this strain with this much THC CBD and do, you know, two drops a day. And so they'll help you figure out your first dose. And you can always come back if it's not working well, et cetera. The pharmacist can then help you tweak. Maybe you use a vape, a flower instead rather than using an oil. And so basically together with these medical providers, we'll figure it out over time, and the physicians will begin gaining knowledge as those patients go back for their renewal. They can have a discussion about, like, hey, I used this much oil. It did or it didn't work. Let's increase the number of drops. Let's try a different method of ingesting cannabis. And so over time, we're hopeful that the physicians will gain that knowledge.
Will the pharmacies be private operations or state-run, or how will that work?
That state central fill one I mentioned, I've nicknamed it Frankenstein personally, but that one will be government owned. The 5 to 10 that I mentioned will be privately owned, as will the grow operations, the processing companies, the inspection companies. So basically everything is still privately owned. Market dynamics will be there, with the exception of this government system, should it ever even function to begin with.
How will all of that occur? I mean, as far as the pharmacy dispensing, do we have that level of expertise available here in Utah, or will that have to be sort of imported for some time period before it can really be effective? I mean, we're talking December 1st, correct?
Well, the pharmacy dispensary system won't be operational for at least a couple of years, likely. The government bureaucracies have to, after this bill is enacted, they have to start their administrative rulemaking, and that's a process that takes many months. Then they have to build the database and the electronic system that tracks everything and so forth. So it's going to be a couple of years before you're going to see these businesses functioning in Utah. What begins in December is a protection for patients who are using products they obtain from another state, but who are Utah patients who have qualifying conditions. They have a legal protection. It's called an affirmative defense, where if they were ever arrested because they were caught with, let's say, a THC oil or a lotion or an edible, if they were to be prosecuted, they would have a protection by showing, look, I have an approved condition. My doctor thinks I can benefit from cannabis. So that's the protection in the meantime until patients can get their products from businesses here in Utah, which is going to be a couple of years away.
Right. Okay. So the affirmative defense is something that's based on records with your physician, not so much a card or identifying document.
Precisely.
That shows. I see.
Yep.
Okay. And you said that there were some compromises made with respect to immune disorders, GI disorders. Is there a list somewhere that a person could connect with and have a look at what is considered acceptable and what is not?
Yeah, you know, we just published the agreement, this new proposal. So our website, libertasutah.org, the top post has a list of all the key differences between Proposition 2 and this new agreement. That's the big question. A lot of people are fairly comfortable with what's in Prop 2. It's been out there a while. It's been studied. But this new thing was just announced yesterday. What's different? What's changed? So that top post at libertasutah.org has those differences, and we link to the full, you know, 130-plus page draft that we've been working on for those who want to read the specifics. I will say briefly, we actually got some better stuff in. As I say, the definition of pain, we think, is better. We also have terminal illness as an approved condition, and hospice as well, which is also new. So it's not all bad. You know, in many ways, we like parts of this agreement even better. There's some silly stuff in there, but it's not like all of this agreement is a negative. The word compromise, of course, makes you think that you're getting far less than you initially were going to. Really, this is just a negotiated agreement that's a little different. In some ways, got some silly stuff and not as good. In other ways, it's better.
Well, great. And just quickly, how will that negotiation, how will that agreement be protected as we go forward? Is there some type of legal statement that requires the legislature to, you know, continue to support the agreement? Or what happens when there's a new election?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, everything is at risk. Look, the assumption is that Prop 2 is going to pass, and that will be a mandate that the legislature won't want to touch, and that's the protection against it. I'm here to tell you that's simply not true. There have already been plans to gut Prop 2. There are bill files open, language being drafted. There's no inhibition to undermine key parts of Prop 2. So the reason why the press conference was yesterday before ballots went out was to commit all of us, including the government, publicly, preemptively, that this is what we're going to do. It's why we released the language, the specifics of the draft, so that that public accountability can be there to ensure that this agreement gets passed. Now, I'll say from these private conversations, we're confident that it will. We have no reason to doubt. And I'm a naturally skeptical person. I mean, I'm a libertarian. I'm dealing here with politicians who, you know, I have little reason to trust. But I do think everyone's operating in good faith. I think this agreement will be passed. And it will be up to all of us to hold politicians' feet to the fire to make sure that it gets implemented and remains untouched for the years to come.
Thank you, Connor. That's Connor Boyack. He is the president of Libertas Institute. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Good morning. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. News time is 8:32. Our next guest is Pete Stoughton. He is representing the Winter Sports Alliance. It's the Winter Coat Drive. And then we also have Heather Sims here to talk about the program and just some of the details around that. Welcome. Thanks for coming by. So, Pete, tell us about the program, the details, what people need to know in order to help out in terms of making these contributions.
Great. This is Pete from the Christian Hope, our big Christmas program. And we were making sure every kid, including those scholarship kids, had winter clothing, winter jackets, for our really cold winters, as they've almost started with our first snow. And this has turned out to become a more formal winter clothing drive. And our goal this year is to make sure every kid in Park City and in Summit County who is free and reduced lunch has a new or like new winter jacket.
Okay, and Heather, how many kids are we talking about?
So we're looking to actually clothe about 1,500 kids, which is a big deal. And especially for our programs, and last year has been a major collaboration of all the organizations in town, including SOS and Park City Community Foundation, as well as the Christian Center and YSA. And the reason is many of the organizations were doing their own winter clothing drive, and we came together and decided let's put it all together and work together to make sure that every kid that needs a jacket or snow pants has it. And especially for my programs in SOS, where kids are skiing and they really need those extra warm clothing. So it's been, last year we managed to at least clothe, was it 800 or 900 kids?
We got almost 1,000 actually.
Yeah. Almost 1,000 kids. So it is a lofty deal to get 1,500, but we know that Park City and Summit County are very generous. And anybody that has, you know, slightly used clothing that their kids have grown out of, we would love to have them maybe donate to the Christian Center, as long as they say this is for Operation Hope. And then the other thing is we have boxes in all the schools where people can donate their gently used clothing. We're looking for underlayers, we're looking for outer layers, we're looking for goggles, gloves. You know, it's really hard when we get kids who have jackets on the mountain and then they turn up in wool gloves that are not suitable. So gloves is another issue. Thing that we are collecting.
And what's the age range typically? I mean, or size range?
So we're looking all the way up from really new, like newborns, really,
yep,
right?
Newborns.
All the way up to high schoolers. And sometimes it's the older kids that actually get left out. You know, we're looking at all ages.
So it's not necessarily school age kids. It's also siblings.
Right.
That type
correct.
Of thing.
Correct.
Okay. And you're involved with the SOS program?
So, no, I'm not. I'm the YSA, Youth Sports Alliance, but we've come together, collaborate with the SOS. So I do the after-school programs on Friday afternoons. So all the kids in my programs that are in the snow and ice, so that's cross-country, alpine skiing and snowboarding, and the freestyle, and even ice skating, they need those jackets. And like Pete said, you know, we've got snow on the mountains already, and so it's not going to be long before it starts to turn cold, and these kids need them.
Right. And so you mentioned that there are boxes at each of the schools?
Yes.
Throughout the entire district?
Through in Park City at the moment, yeah.
Okay. And these boxes are inside, so mm-hmm. you bring them into the school and drop them off there.
Yep.
And it sounds like along with the gloves, hats, equipment, you probably need boots as well?
We do.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we do need boots as well.
Yep, anything that you would buy for your kids in the community as I'm going shopping and getting excited for which color jacket my daughter wants, we want to do the same for the kids in our community. And so as people are out there, maybe they see a great deal. That would be a great opportunity. Hey, just buy one extra pair of gloves and bring that by the Christian Center or drop it off in one of the school boxes. There's other areas around town that have donation boxes, such as most of the coffee shops. Help make that one little impact.
Okay, great. And how long has this project been going on? How many years have we done this now in Park City?
So collaborating together, it's been, nearly three years. But previously I had collected clothing and Pete had collected clothing for the Christian Center. So we'd been doing it separately. But we really realized that we'd make a better effort if we came together and work together for all these organizations in town. So, you know, if there's any organizations out there that would like to help us, either donating clothing or even if they're, you know, at Christmas, sometimes they'll do something for their employees, will give back something. If they would like to donate clothing for our kids, we would really love that. And it would really help our community.
In fact, we actually have one donor who's helped underwrite this whole thing for several years. But if there's a business or an individual who wants to continue that, that's also gives us some purchasing power to go buy new jackets. So if there's a business or an individual who wants to say, hey, I'd like to make this contribution, that's also something that we as a whole collaborative group are welcoming.
Okay. And the collection has started already?
Yes.
Yes.
And we'll continue until you have what you need, or what is there a timeline put on this? Or
there is a timeline. We are doing Operation Hope signups, and that's when we are going to set up a massive coat store for the families at the Christian Center October 29th and 30th. As well as if for some reason we don't have enough jackets, we will have jackets available at Operation Hope on December 19th for the families and the kids. And we'll be able to identify who was not able to get a jacket at that time. So there's lots of different opportunities to make sure kids and families have the adequate materials.
Right. Yeah. And as far as the gently used, are you asking people to wash things before they bring them in, use a Nick Wax? I mean, what are you looking for there?
They can wash it, but leave that $20 bill right in that pocket.
Yes, we would love it to wash it. Last year, my washing machine was on overload with several washes going on. So if they can, that would be great. At the end of the day, we really do want these kids to be able to go outside and enjoy the weather and roll around in the snow, not in a sweatshirt, which we've had people turn up at our programs before, and just in a sweatshirt. And so, imagine if this was your kid, and you know, if your kids are just moving out of that jacket or pant or snow pants, we would love to have them.
Right. Well, thank you so much. That is the Winter Sports Alliance representative Heather Sims and Pete Staunton from the
Christian Center.
Christian Center. Sorry about that.
Okay.
We appreciate you coming in. And can they go and find details on a website anywhere? Or
yes, on both everybody's websites.
Yes.
So
okay.
Yes, and so our Facebook pages.
Yes.
The Winter Sports Alliance website and the Christian Center website. Mm-hmm. Okay. Great.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour, and it's our next guests are from the Sunrise Rotary. We have Connie Nelson and Jim Whitney here to talk about the third annual Shotski event coming up.
Yes. Good morning, Carolyn.
Welcome.
How are you today?
Good morning, Carolyn.
Good. Thanks for coming. So tell us, High West Distillery is going to be filling those shot glasses this year.
Yes, we're super excited, Carolyn. Last 2 years, we've been fortunate enough to have Wasatch Brewery be our sponsors. And this year, High West Distillery asked if they could be our sponsor, and we said yes, and they've been a great partner. They are going to use a double rye whiskey in our shot glass this year. And they've just been fabulous in helping us with all sorts of different branding that's going to come up. It's actually Saturday, October 13th, and you need to register now on parkcityshotski.com. And we have about half the people. We have about 600 signed up, and we need 1,275 participants to beat Breckenridge. They did 1,266 in January this year. And we just have a real friendly rivalry. We go back and forth each year, and we try not to make it too much because we've already had to double up and down the Main Street. But, yeah, it's Saturday, October 13th. It starts at 12:30 for registration, and you need to be registered by 1:30 because the gates will close. The shot is at 2.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Jim, tell us about this rivalry. Can you give us a little background on this, and why is it so important that we keep holding on to this record?
Well, you know, the whole thing is it's just we're so stoked for this, and we discovered Connie and a couple of our members were on the city tour a few years ago and discovered that this was something Breckenridge had been doing for a while, and we thought it was a great idea, and they thought it was a great idea for us to sort of have a rivalry and go back and forth. Both, they have a Rotary Club there that's programs theirs. And so the key to that is that through both Rotary Clubs, all the funds that are raised all go back into our grant, the Sunrise Rotary Grant Program, which then goes right back out to our whole community. All the nonprofits and great organizations that we donate to every fall benefit from all the money we raise through putting this together.
Carolyn, a change we have this year that's we're trying out, we're excited. We're actually, everyone who participates gets a shot glass, which I've just given you one of those, and a wooden nickel. Now, that wooden nickel with the branding of High West, you can go to one of five or all five bars, and the participating bars are High West Distillery, No Name Saloon, O'Shucks, O.P. Rockwell, and Wasatch Brewery, and there will be a signature High West drink at each one of those of their selection. So you and your gang go down there, take your wooden nickel, and you get a free drink at one of those five. And they're all participating. The community's really come on board here, and they're all participating. It's going to be a big street party, so we need everyone to come down.
So that's $25 a ticket.
Correct.
And you get this special nickel that gets you something very nice,
yes.
It sounds like. And then all the money that's raised, the $25, all of the sponsorship, that type of thing, it all goes towards the grant program.
This is the Park City Sunrise Rotary Club's main fundraiser for our grants program, of which we give about 20 grants out to community groups throughout Summit County.
Okay, and last year it looks like you came in right around $23,000,
yes.
A little over $23,000.
We were excited.
So do you have a goal this year, or
our goal is to beat it.
Beat it, yeah.
Our goal is $25,000. I mean, I said $40,000, but we just want to give back to the community as much as we can. So, but we need everyone to participate, and please do sign up. Last 2 years, it's sold out. So for some reason, everyone waits till the last couple of days, but go now.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming in and giving us that. Where can people go to learn more and to purchase a ticket?
ParkCityShotski.com.
Okay. That's Jim Whitney.
So much fun.
Thank you, Jim Whitney and Connie Nelson from the Sunrise Rotary. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks,
Carolyn.
Our next guests we have in are from the Artique Boutique. Do I have that right?
Yeah.
Okay, great. That's Katie Stellflug and photographer Tom Kelly. And we've got them here today to talk about the Backroads Americana presentation art exhibit going on. These are photographs from Tom Kelly, and people know Tom from his many, many years as the representative for the U.S. Ski and Snowboard team. And so now we're bringing him here as an artist and creative. And welcome. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Yes.
We brought some photographs to show to all of the listeners, too.
Oh, good. Excellent. Excellent. We are going to have some of those posted with this story. Don't you worry. So Artique, Katie, I can't believe it's been 7 years that you've been
in
business.
Right? Yeah.
I remember going to the opening. Oh, my gosh. So I imagine there have to be some days in Camas that are kind of quiet. Some of those maybe winter days that could get a little quiet there, but you've managed to make this work and 7 years. That's an accomplishment.
Yeah. You know, I mean, we are still on a highway and there are plenty of people coming out in the winter and there's plenty of people that live out there and more every day. And, you know, there are quiet days, but I think all in all, things have picked up over the last 7 years.
Yeah. So, Tom Kelly, you have been traveling for a number of decades with the U.S. Ski and Snowboard team, and now you've retired, which has put you into a whole new realm of...
Yeah, I'm busier.
Yeah, okay. That sometimes happens. But so have you been cultivating this creative part of yourself for all these years? Have you been snapping photographs and that type of thing and paying attention to all of this type of thing for all the years you've traveled? Or
Yeah, a little bit. My background, I actually grew up as a photographer. I was a news and sports photographer. Literally when I was in high school in Madison, Wisconsin, and into college, I worked for daily newspapers, and I was doing great there. And then our newspaper went on strike in 1977, and I ended up doing PR for the ski area in northern Wisconsin. That kind of pushed me into the ski business. But, you know, when I think back to my early days as a photographer, I was a functional photographer. I was there to record what happened on the football field or a fire or an accident, whatever it might be. I never really thought of myself as an artist, and it's only really been recently that I have. When digital photography came in 15 or 20 years ago, I picked up a camera again and started to photograph more and more and have done landscapes. And I ran into Katie about 4 or 5 years ago. And ironically, we come from the same hometown. She grew up about a mile from where I grew up, but I had long left town when she was born. But the gallery was interesting to me. And my wife, Carol Dew, got in there with her fiber art. And then I did a gallery show, I think, in 2015. I've done one each year. First year was Barnes, which are a favorite of mine. The next year was Wildflowers, which is appropriate here in Utah. Last year, I did one called Light, Land, and Sky. And this year, I thought I would tour the back roads of America and do back roads Americana.
Yeah, so I was reading some things. Your background, having been raised in Wisconsin, you'd go on Sunday drives.
Yeah, we would go. We were bootleggers. We would drive down from Madison to Rockton, Illinois. They didn't sell margarine in Wisconsin, the dairy state, so you had to go down to Illinois to smuggle margarine back across the border. But we would go on these Sunday drives, and it was all back roads, and you'd see the Burma-shave signs, and we'd go down U.S. 51, a two-lane highway, and then we would take trips out east. So as a young boy, I did a lot of traveling by car around the country on these back roads. Now we have these interstates where you can zip along at 80 to 85 miles an hour, and it's wonderful, nice scenery, but you don't see America. So we did it. I've done a lot of backroads exploring, but this summer my wife Carol and I decided to go back to Wisconsin and not touch the interstate highway system and just use backroads. And we got to the point that we really preferred county roads and town roads, not even U.S. highways. And it allowed us to stop, and there was no other traffic, and it was just us and the horses. And I was looking for old gas stations, dilapidated old abandoned buildings, pastoral farm scenes, and great old barns, and we found all of that, and that's going to be captured in Backroads Americana at Artique.
Okay, and how will the display be put together? Or it's already underway, I guess. So I understand there are things hanging from wire, and you have some really interesting finishes going with your frames. And
You have to come to see it, really. Well, there's a variety. You know, Tom has printed some on canvas and some on regular photo paper and in, you know, frames. And we have barnwood frames. We have a new artist and a good friend of Tom that worked with him at the U.S. Ski Team. Walt Evans is making beautiful barnwood frames and even adding metal and horseshoe nails to them. So they really complement Tom's photos very well. And the rusty, you know, rust and old wood on the photos are beautiful, of course, in their own way, and the frames really enhance that. But yeah, there is some barbed wire and, you know, a creative way of hanging some of the smaller prints as well.
Okay, and so these images, Tom, they are coming from this particular trip you took this summer.
For the most part, yeah. In fact, I think pretty much everything is from this trip this summer. And I have a broad collection of these from other trips, but focused primarily on this. And it's one of those, anytime you do a show like this, you have a body of work that's rather large. You got to, how do I call this down to about 10 or 12 images? So been able to successfully do that. And I think it tells a really interesting story. And I'm excited to be able to tell the story to people, because I think this is one where it's not just seeing beautiful wildflowers from Albion Basin. It's seeing the street on a ghost town up in Wyoming. And you know, what's the significance of it? So the anchor picture for the show is this one that I call Geronimo. And this is Main Street in Shoshone, Wyoming. A really interesting rail town up in east central Wyoming. Happened to stumble on it on the 5th of July this year, and we spent about 2 hours photographing it. And for me, this image is really an interesting new form of art for me, because I looked at this and I couldn't decide, do I want to do this in color or do I want to do it in black and white? And I grappled with it, and I finally decided to pull out one segment of it. And it's a Geronimo painting dating back to the 1970s by a local artist by the name of Bart Vroman. And it's now just kind of faded, but it still is a great image, and it's quite a poignant reminder of what this main street was, a very bustling main street just a few decades ago.
Yeah, it's interesting looking at this photo. You've got it's all black and white except for the image.
Yeah, except for Geronimo.
Yeah, yeah. And those are the original colors that are remaining.
Yeah, they are.
Has
they
it been
are.
Enhanced? Or?
It, no, not at all. And there's some verbiage there that's interesting. And we were just captivated by it. Did some research on it and learned a little bit more, learned about the history of that town. And, you know, the whole thing about this was looking at the scenes, looking at these old scenes, these abandoned scenes, this vintage fleet of old Ford trucks in Minnesota, and thinking about the stories that all of those images hold. And in particular, we stopped at this old house along the Pecatonica River in Wisconsin with all the windows blown out, a drape kind of blowing in the breeze from the inside to the out. And just thinking about the generations of families who probably grew up in that house along the river and long since abandoned. And I think actually in the recent flooding they had there was probably fairly severely damaged. So images like that that tell a story of the past, even though we don't know just what that story might be.
Yeah. It sounds like we need to find out what the hours are and how long this is going through the entire month of October.
Yep. Yep. Okay. Tom will be our featured artist for the whole month of October. And of course, we have the artist opening tonight from 6 to 9 in Camas. And of course, anyone who's been there knows that it's a nice gathering. You can meet Tom, talk to Tom about the images, and, you know, light food and drink as well will be served. And it's always fun okay. community event.
And just you're on the main street in Camas?
Yep, 283 okay. North Main Street in Camas.
Okay, great. Well, thank you, Tom Kelly, for bringing us yet another creative expose. I can't wait to see what happens next year. Hope great. You're thinking about that already.
Always thinking about it, and okay. it's sometime the memory will, or the idea will come. So thanks for having us on, Carolyn.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
And I've got Katie Stelflug. She is the owner of Artique, and appreciate you all coming in.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks.